Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied
out
the shots.
Welcome to so tell me why you mad. Anything is potable! The Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jake King. Ladies and gentlemen, he is coming to us live from Miami, where the Celtics will play the Miami Heat tomorrow, or probably today, but by the time you're listening to this, in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, after the Celtics turn the ball over in Game 3 and lose after making a 20-point comeback and then falling short. And then in Game 4, absolutely dominating the Miami Heat, just not allowing them to score the basketball pretty much for the first 10 minutes of the game. Jay, why can't there be a close game in this series? And what were you thinking with about 4 minutes left in the first quarter when the Heat had only made one field goal?
Game 3 turned into a close game.
That is valid. Valid point.
But yeah, during that first quarter, it got to the point where it felt like an AAU tournament where one of the best teams in the state was just playing like just a bunch of bums that were picked up off the side of the road by some coach. And if you've played AAU basketball, you know that there are just certain matchups that are just absolute bloodbaths. And that's what the first quarter felt like. That was incredible. I've never seen anything like it. The Heat had 2 points in the paint in the first quarter and 2 3-point attempts, which is like almost impossible to do. They got absolutely nothing that they wanted. The Celtics defense, like you could tell they were pissed off by what Bam Adebayo did to them. They were pissed off by what the Heat did to them in the first quarter of Game 3. And you could tell from the first possession, Al Horford denies Bam Adebayo out at the three-point arc, makes it really tough for him to get the ball at all. Then Bam does eventually get the ball, and Horford just strips him. And it was like, oh, okay. Like, it's going to be different than it was in Game 3. And it was very, very different.
It's a valid point. I think the biggest adjustment the Celtics made, well, there was two adjustments. One, they had Rob Williams on the court, which just felt like such a deterrent at the rim and made the Heat just a little bit more hesitant every time they got in the paint. And then another thing they did was basically it looked like they were playing a lot more drop defense pretty much anytime Bam or PJ Tucker were setting a screen. And it like they neither of those guys really did much on the short roll. I think PJ Tucker, like anytime a PJ Tucker takes a floater, I think is a win for the Celtics. Bam really didn't get much going. And I thought the Celtics just did a good job of basically just having really active hands. Derek White came up with a number of huge steals, and he had a very solid first half, especially on the defensive end. But what do you see from the Celtics just in terms of like what they do to really slow down the Miami Heat? Because, I mean, some of the shots Miami just like missed, like the normal mid-rangers, but the Heat were take like just got nothing at the rim. So what the Celtics do to force them into kind of those mid-range shots?
Yeah, they got all mid-range. And I think part of it was that like Kyle Lowry, after the 5-minute burst at the beginning of Game 3, just hasn't looked to be moving the same. Jimmy Butler sat out the second half of Game 3 with a knee issue. And he just didn't seem to have the pop that he normally does. So I think that's part of it. And when you're not necessarily as worried about those guys, then you can do a better job on Max Strus, Gabe Vincent. And I just thought the Celtics defense was awesome. And they forced, it was all mid-range. It was all floaters. It was all nonsense, really. And like it wasn't until Victor Oladipo got in the game that the Heat did anything of substance. Victor Oladipo's emergence in this series has been unexpected for me, at least. I thought his defense was amazing in the second half of Game 3 after he was a DMPCD in the first half. And then Game 4, he was basically the only offensive option for a while for a team that, like, honestly, it did not look like Butler and Lowry were moving well. Those guys are two of the toughest guys in the world. If, like, they're capable, perhaps, of gritting through it and being much better in Game 5. But the way that they were playing is just going to make it really hard on the rest of the guys if they can't give more deeper in this series.
Yeah, I mean, Oladipo, 18 points at the half. The entire Heat team had 33 points. They got 6 points from Butler there. Strus and Vincent.
That's just a wild stat.
Victor Oladipo, of all people, just like, how many games did he play this year? Like 10? Was he active for 10 regular season games? And just for him to be, and he was unstoppable. Like, he was knocking down every shot there in the first half. But I really did not see that coming. But it's kind of been wild for the Celtics in this series. Their two wins have been absolute blowouts. And then it really feels like, and this has been true for the entire postseason, or I guess the Bucks series, because they didn't lose any games in the Nets series. When they don't turn over the basketball, like it makes it so much easier for them to win games, because despite winning this game by 20, the Celtics offense was pretty horrific. They shot 40% from the field, 23%, only hit 8 threes.
Is Jason Tatum's shoulder still bothering him?
I thought it looked so, like most of his
he had two air balls.
Most of his shots in the first half.
And that's
yeah,
weird.
And most of his shots in the first half were like a little bit off. The one three he did make, it felt like he put like a little bit extra on it. And so he did knock down, like, I guess a couple mid-range shots, but pretty much his entire offense was putting his head down and going to the rim. And the Celtics, if they didn't get to go to the free throw line 38 times, like, this would have been a lot closer of a basketball game, because as bad as Miami's offense was, the Celtics offense wasn't that much better. They just didn't happen to turn the ball over, and, you know, they got to the line a bunch in this game.
Yeah, and like all they have to do, like you said, like the biggest key for them is for their offense to be good enough that it doesn't totally ruin their defense. They have played Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Giannis, and now Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, all those guys, and their half court defense is substantially the best in the NBA during the playoffs. Like, pretty far and away the best half-court defense in the playoffs, despite playing all those guys. And obviously, Milwaukee didn't have Chris Middleton, and it was going to be kind of a scratch-and-claw type of deal for them in the half-court. But the Nets have one of the best offenses in the league. The Heat are capable, and the Celtics, like, basically whenever they're in the half court, have just shut everyone down. I don't know if like just nobody can score on their defense, or just these teams can't score on their half court defense. But like, as long as they don't turn the ball over, live ball turnovers, or have bad shots and complain to the ref and not get back, then their defense has been amazing and will give them a chance to win any game. But it's basically all the other times when their offense has impacted the defense that they've struggled. Sometimes it's just for a quarter and things just go awful. Sometimes it's been for closer to a full game, like it was in game three, where even when they started to come back, it just was turnover, turnover. Jaylen Brown, like, just dribbling into dudes' hands.
Has he forgotten how to dribble?
But
because it's still a wild ride anytime Jaylen Brown puts the ball on the floor.
I think they're being very physical with him. They're sending a lot of help on his drives. And also, I feel like they've gotten the memo that the ball is up for grabs when he's dribbling to the hoop, because it just seems like they're just like converging on him. And sometimes, like, he was pretty bad in game four offensively, but, you know, game three, like, he was either getting all the way to the rim and finishing. I think he made every 2-point attempt in that game while scoring 40 points, or he was just getting the ball stripped from him. It was really like all or nothing that game. It was just a wild, wild game for him. I've never seen someone score 40 and be that likely to just, like, dribble into traffic and lose it and just have the other team go the other way. It has been a wild ride for him. But it all goes back to, for them, like, their defense is just a special unit, especially when they have everybody out there. Robert Williams and Marcus Smart are questionable for game five, so we'll see on them. But when they have everybody out there and they can play good enough offense just to give themselves a chance defensively, like, they just shut everyone down.
Their best offense is just not turning the ball over. Like, as long as they just don't give up massive amounts of fast break points to the other teams, like, their half court offense is so good that they're going to be in the game and probably will end up being in leaded game. Like, they again, in game four, they just did not play that well, but they just didn't turn the ball over. And Miami's defense, Miami, at least in games three and game four, are playing some of the most physical. Like, you talk about Brad Stevens loves, like, players who get into the ball. That's all the Miami Heat does. They get into the ball and they play extremely physical. And for some reason in game three, that resulted in 23 turnovers for the Celtics. I think they just didn't handle the pressure well and kind of felt like they got sped up. They still, like, in game three, they still got to the line 30 times. It just so happens in game four, they got to the line 38 times. But it feels like Miami's playing this type of defense that is just like, we are going to be physical with you on every single possession. You are going to have to earn it or get a whistle. And I thought the Celtics did a much better job in game four of just not making extraordinarily stupid passes or throwing the ball at some guy's feet as they were doing in game three. But I thought they handled the physicality pretty well. There was still Gabe Vincent. I know he did not give the Heat much in on offense of that game, but he was playing some of the most hard-nosed, like, aggressive getting into the ball defense on Derek White that I've seen in a while. He is a pest out there. And it feels like the entire...
I've got a shout out to Bam Adebayo too, because the Heat were down 30 and that dude was just hounding guys. It was, he didn't care that they were down 30 late in the third quarter. He was just trying to give somebody hell. So I have a lot of respect for the competitive spirit of that Heat team. They are full of just absolutely tough bastards. Like, every single one of those dudes is just wired to compete. And you know, there's a lot of talk about Heat culture. Obviously, you love the Heat culture talk, Packard. But I think beyond that, like, they just got a lot of dudes, from Jimmy Butler to PJ Tucker to Bam Adebayo to Kyle. Like, these are guys who have lived their whole lives being the gritty dude that wins because they just outcompete people. And so that's a lot for the Celtics to deal with. I think you saw that in game three. Like, they tried to prepare for that. They told themselves the Heat were going to come up come in and just with a totally different level of focus after getting smacked in game two, and they still weren't ready for any of it. And like if you lighten up against this Heat team, like they are tough enough, strong enough, manly enough to just give you a really hard
time. And that's the big question for the Celtics. And I think Ime mentioned it. It felt like four or five times in the press conference. The Celtics this year in the playoffs have been phenomenal in responding to a loss. Each time they've lost this year in the playoffs, they've responded with a win. Can they bring the same level of effort and consistency after winning a game? Like, can they just show up to game five and play like they just lost? I mean, they did it in the Milwaukee game in game five, and then they just had one of the worst collapses in playoff recent memory. And so the question is like, can the Celtics bring that kind of level of effort and focus and just not playing stupid basketball after a win and really take control of this series and give themselves a chance to close it out at home? It feels like you have the utmost confidence in the Celtics coming off of a loss, but just after a win, you just don't know what they're going to get. In game three, they come out and they just give up 40 points in the first quarter. In game one, they played pretty well to start the game and then just got blitzed in the third quarter. It's really not that difficult of a formula. It's just they need to continue to play solid defense and not turn the ball over. But they've been seemingly incapable of doing that two games in a row, save for games six and seven of the Bucks series, because game seven really wasn't a game. But it's just going to be like not normally something I think you think about with basketball teams, but like the Celtics have been struggling to respond to wins in this playoffs. And it's something they really need to change if they don't want to go to another, you know, seven games against this Heat team.
Yeah, I could see why after game two they thought this was going to be kind of an easier series. And so I get a little bit of a letdown after that. But the start of game three was so bad that people were booing them in the playoffs at home. You don't see that very often, especially like the Boston fans have grown to really love this team. But they also held the team very accountable during that disgusting start to game three. But yeah, going back even to the Brooklyn series, it was after a win, like they won game one on a buzzer beater. Game two, they come back and get behind like 17 or 18 points or whatever it was in the first half. Then the Milwaukee series, like game one, they come in and just get mollywopped. And the physicality really bothered them. And I think, I don't know what it is for the Celtics so far. Maybe it's just that they've played like really fucking tough teams. That
teams
could
who
be
also
it.
Respond well to, you know, losses, like, you know, like come back and play with a renewed sense of focus. That could be it.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you got to deal with Brooke Lopez and Giannis and Drew Holiday, and now you're dealing with PJ Tucker and Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry. Like, those are some prideful dudes, a lot of prideful dudes that they're dealing with. So it's probably not as bad as it seems, but they do need to take care of the ball, and they do need to have the defensive effort from the start. Like, you can't let Bam get going, because Bam was just a different dude after they let him get some easy stuff at the beginning of game three. The rest of that game, he was just out to kill. And I thought they actually did a decent job on him after that first quarter. But by then, he was just in such an aggressive mode that they couldn't shut him off. And in game four, it was totally different. Like, they shut down the easy stuff early. He never really got going. He never really got into that aggressive mode. And so I just think, Like the level of focus the Celtics need to have in this series is very high. And game five, that's a very big one. Game five in Miami on the road. You're going to have to win at least one in Miami. And, you know, I think what winners of game five win the series like 81% of the time, something like that. I don't know exactly what the stat is, but it's very high, extremely high. So game five is a big game. I don't know if you knew that, but it's a big game.
Now, like the unfortunate thing about this series so far is that it feels so dependent on whether or not guys on both teams are going to be healthy. Like I was joking last night, but honestly, petition Adam Silver, like let's delay the game five 2 days, you know, like play it on Friday. Let's let these guys get healthy. Let's let Jay King hang out in Miami for a couple of days. He will undoubtedly get sunburned just from going to the beach and not putting on sunscreen. But, like, Robert Williams,
the kid's
learned from the last time he was there, or 2 years ago when he was in Miami, showed up game looking like a lobster.
No, I put sunscreen in my – I put sunscreen on that time, too. I just didn't reapply enough. It's a different type of sun down here.
Well, I want you to stay down there for 3 days just because this series would be so much more fun if there wasn't like – if I didn't have like alerts on my phone just checking the inflammation of, you know, the Celtics impact players and the Heat's impact players. Like you mentioned earlier, it just doesn't look like Jimmy Butler's moving that well. Tyler Hero missed game four and – it really feels like the Celtics are a completely different team when Robert Williams is on the court. And if he can play in game five, that's just a huge boost for them and what they can do on defense and just like their outlet on offense. Like just starting the second half with a nice little lob to Rob Williams is just such an easy point of offense to them. Like the things they can do with like cutting and big to big passing on offense with him, just like lobs at the rim is so important. And so like, I have no idea what's going to happen with Rob's knee at this point, but both him and Marcus Smart, and I guess you'd say.
Yeah, he looked bad at the end of his final.
Yeah,
stint.
And he said after the game that he was feeling fine, but like.
He looked hurt.
I think it was a block.
He said he's feeling great. Like, so, come on, man. We just watched you wincing on the court. We just watched you go grab a pack of ice as soon as you got off the court. We just watched you go to the locker room after you got off the court. But I respect it. He's just like, yeah, I feel great.
Maybe he's just.
But I think he got hurt. It looked like he got hurt when he blocked Jimmy Butler. It was a great, great block. Like Butler tried to body him sort of like he did in game one. And Robert Williams braced himself, took the contact, just swatted it away. But you could see from that point forward, he started wincing. And then his last, like, two of his last plays, he got absolutely blown by. And then after one of them, he was just kind of standing in the corner of the court, like, not going to offense in the other direction. So I think he's definitely dealing with a lot of pain right now. He may said after game two, was it, that Robert Williams would be dealing with pain throughout the rest of the playoffs probably. So it's just something he's going to have to manage and maybe he'll be fine, but he was definitely hurting in game four. And then Marcus Smart, he was moving pretty well when I saw him.
For the entire game, like a man with a just presumably extremely swollen ankle, I did not think standing for like 4 hours in a row was going to be the solution, the rehab required for that. But nope, there was Marcus standing on the sideline, coaching up the team the entire time, talking to the refs. I would have been amazed, as tough as Marcus Smart is, if he played in that game. Like, it looked like the side of his leg hit the floor. Like, that's wild.
He rolled the piss out of his ankle. I mean, he must have been on so, like, the adrenaline must have been coursing so hard for him to check back into that game minutes later, because that he rolled it like hard. Like his ankle was totally sideways, and he just came back and played. And they, in that game, they blew a chance to come back. Like, basically turnovers were the only thing that kept them from coming back. They had everything going for them. Like, everything else going for them. Jimmy Butler was out. The Marcus Smart comes back from injury. Jason Tatum comes back from injury. The crowd is fucking going crazy. And they just couldn't take care of the ball enough. And Max Strus, what a shot by Max Strus. That was a just a silencer from Max Strus. But yeah, it is too bad that there's been so much carnage in this series, because it would be a lot more fun if both teams were healthy. And unfortunately, both teams, like key players, are just banged up. And you know, even Tatum, like I said, I did not think he wasn't hurting, but he absolutely did not shoot the ball well. And some of the misses were just weird, especially for him. It felt like he couldn't even get the ball to the rim sometimes.
Yeah, and it was just a kind of an ugly game four after, you know, the Celtics took a, what was it, 17-point lead? What was it, 18-1 before Miami scored?
How good was Derek White during that early run?
It was amazing, and I love the quote, "If I'm going to fail, I'm going to do it aggressively." Like, that is just a winner's mentality. But yeah, he had 10 points in that first quarter. Knocked down his first three, which was huge. But he was just fantastic on both ends of the court.
And he said that after the game, but he was also saying it at shoot-around. Like, that wasn't just a thing that he said afterward, like after he'd already had a good game. No, he was saying that beforehand. Like, I'm not going to play like a meek person. Like, the previous two games, he took 1-3 over 43 minutes of the previous two games. Like, he just looked totally gun-shy. He scored 3 points total over his first two games of the Miami series, which were games 1 and 3. He missed game 2 for the birth of his son. And it just felt like he needed to get out of that mindset, like, to just and just be himself. That's what he said. So they need him to be aggressive. They need him to at least, like, be a threat. And I just felt like the way he started the game with a drive in transition, a three, then another drive in transition, both of his drives in transition, like, they didn't really have numbers. He was just like, fuck it, let's do this. And I just felt like, especially with Marcus Smart out, that was huge for the Celtics to get what they got out of him. I don't know why he played 41 minutes or whatever in a game that was a 30-point blowout.
I didn't realize he played 41. Maybe that's just wild. Oh, yeah, because at the end of the game, Ime refused to go to his full bench until like a minute 39 left. So he just brought in Tice and Nesmith and just still rolled with White, Pritchard, and Grant.
Yeah, and I understand. Playoff game, and the Heat were like, they were being spunky. It wasn't like they had given up. They were still competing.
Omer Yurtseven was in the game.
But no, they had guys.
A guy named Haywood Highsmith. and Dwayne, can you tell me before the game that you knew Haywood Highsmith existed? Because this is the first I've ever heard of Haywood Highsmith.
What a name. And then we got the subplot of Dwayne Dedmon just pointing at Glenn Davis after all of his made buckets.
I don't know what was happening there, but Big Baby was loving it.
The Big Baby was cackling, and it, like, absolutely cackling in the front row, just loving it, having the time of his life as Dwayne Dedmon, down 30, is just pointing at him after hitting threes and shit. That was just an amazing subplot to a game that otherwise kind of dried up in interest after the first half. Just Dwayne Dedmon going wild at Glenn Davis. Glenn Davis must talk hella raw from the front row, because Kevin Durant was going at him too, when he went to the Nets Celtics game during the regular season. And now Dwayne Dedman is just going fucking bonkers. I thought that was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. I could not get enough of Dwayne Dedman. Just, and you, like, he was really going hard with the trash talk, with the pointing, with everything. I was not prepared for the Dwayne Dedman.
No, it was it's just moments like that that make playoff basketball so damn exciting. The other thing that I think stuck out to this game, I guess it's been the entire playoff run, but jacked up Al Horford. Like, Al Horford swatting a ball into the stands and then looking for it, putting the hand over the head. He's been the most, like, the biggest showman I think I've ever seen Al Horford be. He does, like, back in the day, old playoff Al would maybe give you a fist pump, but he would definitely flex. Like, that was his go-to move, but I feel like he's added new things to his game. And talk about, like, a dominant 5-point performance from Al Horford. Like, as good as Robert Williams was,
just the most dominant.
Al Horford on the defensive end was just fucking awesome with 4 blocks and just everything he did to kind of keep Bam out of the game or out. Like, Bam only took 5 shots, and after I thought Bam did an amazing job of getting and going just kind of through or over Horford in game 3. I just thought Horford was phenomenal in game 4. And to do that, plus the theatrics, I just wanted to give it up to the old fella there. Just, he was just – he's been one of the more consistent Celtics. I feel like everyone's kind of had up and down games. But Horford, although even when he's not scoring, is making just a huge impact on this series.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, 2 pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And I'll tell you what, I think he took it personally that Bam whipped his ass in the first quarter of game 3. Because Al Horford doesn't really get his ass whipped very often. But Bam whipped his ass. Bam gave him the business. And it wasn't all Horford's fault. The Celtics' help defense just wasn't there. They left him on an island. They left him in positions that just were tough to handle. But he got his ass kicked from the start by Bam Adebayo in that game. And he was asked, I asked him during shoot around, like, what do you need to do better against Bam? And he gave me like the worst possible answer. It was so bad that I laughed. Like, I literally was sitting there chuckling at how little Al Horford gave me in that answer. And I just felt like he was seething. Like, he was just so ready to get out there and guard Bam Adebayo again. And he delivered, man. Like, that was a top-notch Al Horford performance. And I think he knows, man. Like, he knows this is his chance. This is his chance to win a title. He's never been to the finals. This is the team that has a chance to not just get there, but win the whole damn thing. And I think he senses that. You know, last time he was in Boston, they had the the 2018 run, which was kind of unexpected. And even if they had gotten past LeBron, they would have got just demoralized by the Warriors in the finals. The next year, everyone's excited and they stink. they get bopped in the second round by the Bucks. They won fewer than 50 games. He goes to Philadelphia where he's thinking like, oh, I'm with Joel Embiid. I'm with Ben Simmons. We're going to be title contenders. And that just flopped. And now he's 35, 36, whatever he is. And he realizes this is it. And this could be it. This could be his last best chance at not just getting to the finals, but winning it. And I just feel like he's been locked in. And the amount of minutes he's playing, the load he's carrying defensively, it's just kind of ridiculous for a guy his age and a big man his age to be in that good shape to be able to handle all of that. It's just really impressive.
Yeah, I was looking at the matchup numbers that they have on NBA.com, and I momentarily forgot that the Heat just didn't make any shots in that game or this early on. I was like, wow, these are absurd. But Bam Adebayo 0-for-2 against Al Horford in that entire game, which just feels absolutely ridiculous. The best player.
You could tell the first possession. I swear to God, you could just see it and be like, oh, Al's different. Like Al is ready for this challenge tonight.
The best player to score on Al Horford in game four was Caleb Martin, who was, I think, the Heat's second best player on offense. Solid game from Caleb Martin. Who knew?
There was a point when Victor Oladipo and Caleb Martin had more made three-pointers than the entire Celtics roster, and the Heat were down like 30. That game just made no sense. The level of, like, the Celtics, they were 4-for-30-ish at some point. They really shot like that Clippers game. Remember the Clippers game when they were 4-for-43 or whatever it was from deep? And it was just like miss after miss after miss. They shot like that in a playoff game and won by 30. How does that happen?
The Heat did not make a field goal until 4 minutes left in the first quarter.
I guess that'll do it. I guess that helps.
So do you have any insight? Have they media spoke today about, or not media, you are the media, like whether or not they're going to get Robert Williams or Marcus Smart back? Like, what can we expect from the Celtics in game five in terms of health? And then if they are not playing, I guess, I don't know. I feel like Marcus Smart's going to play just because he's the type of crazy who's not going to miss two games in a row. I wouldn't be as surprised if Robert Williams doesn't play. Do you think they go with starting Tice again, or is that such a colossal failure in game one that that they immediately just go to starting Grant Williams?
I don't know. Ime's sort of like he makes some very good adjustments, but I think he also just believes in his visions, if that makes sense. Like, he thinks that Tice next to Al Horford should work and should be good defensively. And I don't think he looked at that first quarter as Daniel Tice's fault. I just think he thought the whole Celtics team just shitted the bed.
Shat the bed.
yes. They shat the bed, whatever it is. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Robert Williams does sit out, if he goes back to Daniel Tice and just says, let's be better than we were before. We'll do a lot of the same stuff that we wanted to do with Robert Williams. But yeah, I mean, that wasn't great. And I think when they've gone small and like they, with Grant Williams, like they've been good during this series. So either way wouldn't surprise me. I am on your side that Marcus Smart is probably the more likely to play. I just felt like Robert Williams, you could tell, was just going through it pain-wise during the third quarter of game four? Yeah. And so I would not be surprised if he misses a game. Obviously, he's doing a lot of treatment and everything like that, trying to get back. But you could tell he was just playing through a lot.
At this point, is there any, like, treatment, or is that it just doesn't feel like there's so much you can do to make it better. And like, maybe if there wasn't a game every other day, it wouldn't be this be this way. But like, especially if they're like flying in between each of those games, like you just kind of expect Robert Williams to play a game, miss a game, play a game. And hopefully hopefully the Celtics can still get a win, and then he can come back for game six. It's just frustrating as a fan for both teams to be so kind of banged up right now, just because it hasn't been the greatest basketball, I would say, the first four games of the series, just with the kind of the wild blowouts. And you'd rather both of these teams healthy and both of these teams playing at their best. But it's really tough to know like what you're going to get, one, if Robert Williams is going to play, or what you're going to get from Marcus Smart. Or, I mean, if Jimmy Butler plays like he did in game four again, like if he just doesn't have the kind of the bounce and athleticism, and clearly he didn't have it in game three or enough for them to kind of pull him for the second half of that game. If he doesn't show up for game five, I'm just not exactly sure what the Heat's answer is, other than just having Bam be super aggressive again. And so who knows? Game five, a very important game. And I feel like we have no idea what's going to happen, because we have no idea which players are going to show up, if they're going to be healthy, or if the Celtics will just not turn the basketball over. Like anything could happen in this game, depending on those major variables.
Yeah, and I feel like Lowry and Butler, them not being right or not looking right in game four, that also helps the Celtics take care of the ball. You know, those two guys are such disruptors defensively when they're right. And when they're not right, it's just different. Like, you don't have to play through as much. Health is such a big factor in this series. It really is too bad that we can't see these teams at full strength. But what can you do? What can you do?
You know what we can do? We can go to celebrity caller Joshua B. Join us here on Anything Is Potable. Joshua B. Oh, my God. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. Thanks for that lovely introduction. I actually have a compliment to pay Jay King before I get to two questions. I wrote these two questions down. So this time I actually have two questions, and I wrote them down, and I think I've got the good writing for them. But first, I want to give you a compliment, Jay, because at the beginning of everything, you told me that the Eastern Conference playoffs was going to be a bloodbath. And I at first was like, no way, the Celtics are going to do great. And sure enough, you were right about both, right? It was a bath when we just destroyed the Brooklyn Nets. And then it was the blood when we made Giannis bleed from the side of his head. And now it's a bloodbath every time there's like a blowout going on back and forth. So you were spot on, man. Great, great call.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Josh.
All right. So I'll ask my first question, and then I have a second follow-up question. So the first question is, am I the only person who thinks that these shots that are being taken by Kyle Lowry are like the biggest bricks I've ever seen like in my life? I mean, I swear the ball is going like 10 feet off the back iron of the hoop. And is that really the $25 million man that Miami paid for? Because that's not the Kyle Lowry that I remember. I mean, even with a shot.
Yeah. I feel like he's just not right physically. I thought the start of game three, like the very start of game three, he pushed the pace in transition. Literally the first play gets Max Strus a wide open three. Then he goes back, forces a Jason Tatum turnover by being in perfect help position. Then keeps pushing the pace, gets Bam out of bio. I just thought he was awesome for like 5 minutes. And then he left the court, went to the locker room area or whatever it was, and has not been the same since. I just don't think he's right. I don't think he has his normal oomph to give. and he's still made some plays. Like he had that sneaky steal late in game three. But from a scoring perspective, and you could tell the Celtics, like they don't think that he can really beat them. Just the way that they have been approaching that matchup, it seems like they know that he's damaged goods right now.
I think you're right on with that. So with that sort of, but the other thing about it is that at least the offensive sets seem more settled down with Miami with Lowry on the floor than when he was off the floor. I mean, when Gabe Vincent was running the show, it seemed, I don't know, I guess it was only for one game, but it seems like they're more frenetic. It seems like they're whipping the ball around and just everybody's going sort of everywhere all at once, but it could have just been the feel out game.
Lowry's a basketball genius. Like he knows what his team wants. But I mean, you look at the playoff series he's played so far, and the first round he played three games, shot 34.8%. The second round he played two games, shot 21.4%. This round he's played two games and is shooting 29.4%. So it's just like the offense, the efficiency, the movement that he normally has just isn't there right now, and you can tell.
Okay. So this will lead me sort of into my second question, which is that for everybody that I've been listening to throughout the day has been saying that we don't know what it could be in game five. All we know is that one team is going to blow out the other. And I happen to think that it's probably going to be a close game as opposed to sort of a blowout in either direction, which I know bucks the trend. But the one thing that I am confident about is that Eric Spoelstra is going to make an adjustment. There's going to be something that he adjusts. And I was trying to figure out what that adjustment would be. And in my eyes, and I would love to hear your perspective on this, I think that the adjustment is to insert Victor Oladipo into the starting lineup alongside Bam, PJ Tucker, Kyle Lowry, and Jimmy Butler. And what that allows you to do is have this sort of switching defense that really attacks the one Boston weakness that I can see from game to game, which is dribbling and holding onto the ball and being secure. It seems like when we get into trouble in this series, it's when we're either trying that lob pass to anybody other than Robert Williams, or when we're just being sloppy or unfocused or lazy, whatever adjective you want to use, on our dribbling. And I think that lineup would be the adjustment that the Heat would make to at least get out to some sort of a lead in the first quarter. And this sort of ties into this idea that anytime that Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, or, you know, Highsmith is on the floor, I think Peyton Pritchard is just fine. I mean, really, or Max Strus. Like, I think you can hide Peyton Pritchard in the series, especially if you think Kyle Lowry isn't right. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think there's going to be like a – do you foresee Spo making an adjustment? And if that adjustment is the one that I'm – you know, if I'm correct in that, then like how did the Celtics sort of counter that? Do you think they bring Derek White in the starting lineup, or do you think that Robert Williams just continues to start alongside Al Horford? I don't know. This is just me sort of spitballing, but I've been trying to figure it out myself, and I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I think the Celtics will start the same way if they're healthy that they always do. I do think Spoelstra has to try something, and to me the biggest thing is their half court offense. They just were incapable of scoring during game four, and I know there's a balance between throwing out, you know, more shooting, whether it's Hero, Duncan Robinson, Strus. But I feel like they need to do that, not just to spruce up their offense, and maybe not in the starting lineup, but at some point in the rotations. And not just spruce up the offense, but to give Bam Adebayo more space to operate. Like, we saw in game three, when he had a little space, he was hell. And I just feel like the Hero absence, it wasn't the biggest deal because he doesn't start, and the starting lineup just got thumped. But I thought game one, he really changed the game when he came in, because he gives them somebody you need to guard at the 3-point arc. And right now, with the way Kyle Lowry is, Jimmy Butler doesn't really shoot threes. Max Strus isn't a ball handler. So there's nobody, Victor Oladipo, like, you're cool with him shooting off the dribble threes. I feel like Tyler Hero is just a big deal for their offense. Obviously, he's been a target, and obviously his minutes haven't always gone well. But I do feel like as long as the Celtics are, you know, keeping the Heat in the half court, like, they're just going to have a tough time to score. Maybe it's just – maybe the adjustment is just, like, do whatever the hell it takes to force turnovers. Like, whatever it takes, just go out there and do it.
I don't know if like, Oladipo – I don't know. When I think of the Miami's offense, like, playing at its best, it's, like, a lot of movement, a lot of, like, cutting and – dribble handoffs with Bam at the top, and, like, him occasionally, like, keeping the ball. And then I just feel like Strus has played, like, he's played his way into lineup. He's clearly surpassed the $90 million man in Duncan Robinson. And Oladipo, while he's been pretty damn good on offense, I feel like he's not really, like, gotten a lot of his points necessarily in the flow of offense. It's more been Victor Oladipo going one-on-one, or Victor Oladipo creating some steals and then just, man, he is fast and getting to the basket. And so I don't, like, maybe putting Oladipo in the starting lineup works, but I just don't know if he's necessarily, like, the kind of guy who's running around the court, coming off screens and doing things like that. I mean, Jay, you didn't hear this.
But that could be a way to just try to force as many turnovers as possible. Like, just have defensive disruptors everywhere. I also think I don't know if they have the personnel to do it, but if there's a way to limit Dwayne Dedman minutes, they would probably benefit from that. And I don't know if they could go to PJ Tucker at five. Like, I just don't know. Like, could you dust off Markieff Morris? Is he still even?
I don't know if he's ever recovered from the Jokic body check.
Yeah, so I just don't know what the solution to that would be, or the other approach. I just think Dwayne Dedman minutes have gone very poorly for the Heat so far.
Yeah, and if they
he does very little for them.
And
in this
if
series.
The Heat are missing any other guys, like, they really don't have the best depth. Like, Gabe Vincent, Oladipo were, like, effective off the bench, but. And even Caleb Martin, I mentioned him before, had a pretty solid game and is a solid player. But maybe Oladipo putting it, like, him in the game is something they can do. But at some point, they're going to need to put in, whether it be Hero. I thought Tatum, like, was pretty willing to go at Strus. Was definitely very willing to go at Duncan Robinson. They're going to be able to put, like, the Heat don't have just, like, the depth right now to put out, like, just those all defensive lineups. But you're right. Like, that feels like the best strategy for them is just to create as much chaos on that end of the court and just really try to go for turnovers. Maybe it's trying a wackier zone. The Celtics haven't struggled as much against the zone this year as they did in the bubble. But it's something that I think Spoelstra's used a little bit more sparingly, and maybe it's just, like, cranking that up or sprinkling it in more often to kind of try and create some more confusion. But I think the Celtics did a much better job of, like, okay, the Heat are in a zone. Let's put Jason Tatum at the elbow and just let him turn around and shoot and get easy buckets without any sort of ball pressure. And so I don't know. I don't know what the Heat's adjustment is, but I said the exact same thing after game two, and then they came out and blitzed the Celtics, I guess mostly with turnovers and Bam in game three. So if I'm guessing anything, they're probably going to go back to the turnovers and Bam strategy, which was so useful for them in their wins in this series.
Yeah, sometimes the best adjustment is just play better.
I think the Celtics will probably try to do the same in game five. Let's go to Sam H. right now. I'm really hoping this is Sam Hauser, but I'd be doubtful if it is. Sam H., thanks for joining us here on Anything is Potable.
How's your shoulder doing, Sam?
You guys are joining a long list of people I've disappointed today.
Glad to be in. Glad to join that group.
Sounds like a hell of a day. Yeah.
So I have two questions, and I think it's probably just easier to do it as in one go and just let you guys run with it. But I've been a big fan of Robert Williams for a little while now. And Jay, just reading your article earlier today about how he was getting in Derek White's ear when Derek White first joined the team. And then, you know, earlier on in the year when he was asked about his own candidacy for Defensive Player of the Year, he was very quick to lavish a bunch of praise on Marcus Smart. It just seems like he's really grown as a presence in the locker room. And I was just wondering if you guys could speak to that at all and sort of how you've seen him adjust from, you know, a rookie who was, you know, missing flights to sort of a more veteran presence on the team who, you know, speaks his mind and is sort of respected in that regard. And then the other question, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think he's a guy that loves to lift up the people around him. And you saw it with the Smart comments, the Defensive Player of the Year stuff. But I think you see it with the way he plays, too. You know, he'd rather make a good pass than do anything else offensively. He like, really doesn't ever get a play called for him to score and still is out hustling, going after offensive rebounds, all that stuff. Yeah, he's really become, and I mean, you talk to Jason Tatum, he raves about how Rob's his favorite teammate to play with, everything like that. And I think everyone just kind of appreciates that Robert Williams is not at all in it for himself. He's just kind of a very selfless dude.
And then I apologize to the listeners who have been sort of following basketball a lot longer than I have. I probably picked up maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It just seems like in round one, they play Brooklyn. Kevin Durant has often been discussed as like the, you know, sort of the greatest offensive talent we've ever seen. Kyrie is obviously Kyrie. In the second round, they've got the Bucks as the defending champs. Giannis, people say, it might be, you know, the best player alive at the moment. And now they're going up against Eric Spoelstra, who gets a lot of credit as being sort of one of the better coaches of the last decade. And if they win this and go to the finals, it looks like they'll be playing the Warriors, who are, or, you know, have been probably, you know, the most dominant team of the decade. I'm just wondering, that seems atypical in terms of playoff runs to go through sort of so many versions of a generational talent.
Hell yeah.
Is that accurate, or have I just not watched enough basketball?
No, that's totally accurate. Because especially if you're a very good to great team, you're not normally playing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in round one. You're normally playing a normal seventh seed, like the Raptors. Or no offense to the Raptors, I guess that was pretty offensive to the Raptors, but the Bulls. You know, like you're just not playing Hall of Famers. And then second round, like that series was finals caliber. Like those two teams, either of those teams could have won the championship. Obviously the Middleton being out was a big deal, but yeah, the run that the Celtics have been on, the teams that they've run into, like I don't think their path could have been any more challenging, with the exception of obviously Middleton being healthy and some of the Heat players being more healthy. Like they have encountered probably the toughest opponent that they could have in every round so far.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think back.
And if they get to the finals, like it's Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and some championship proven guys waiting for them. And Steve Kerr, who's awesome.
Their first round matchup against a talent like Durant is certainly like an anomaly. I'm trying to think back of like recent runs. The Raptors, they had to beat the Sixers and then the Bucks. But then they kind of played a hobbled 76ers team. Then before that, it was just like LeBron James going to, what was it, 8 straight finals. And it doesn't, I don't remember him facing like a tough challenge in the Eastern Conference, I guess, after the Celtics in like 2012. And I just can't remember, like, there's been occasional like tough Western Conference finals, but just like series after series has not, I can't like think of a run that's been as kind of difficult here for the Celtics. It's just not normally what happens. Normally the first round, if you're a better team, is kind of a cakewalk, and then maybe you'll have a kind of a challenging second round opponent. But even like we saw with the Bucks last year, there's kind of like they fluked themselves like the way into playing the Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals, which is kind of a break for them. But yeah, no, this Celtics run has been absolutely absurd. And if they can move on and make it to the finals, it's just going to be ridiculous. That is, as long as they can react well in a game five and, you know, maybe just act like they lost game four and not turn the ball over 75 times. Then maybe they'll have a chance of making it to the finals. But
just don't turn that bitch over.
It's a very, very simple formula. Don't turn the ball over. Play amazing defense. And let Peyton Pritchard cook when he can. And I mean, it's pretty much the keys to victory for the Boston Celtics.
Peyton Pritchard does cook. That man can really shoot that
thing. It's pretty much all he does.
How much better is he than Dennis Schroeder? My goodness.
You don't have to tell me. I believe the one preseason prediction I got right was that this team would finally take off once they traded Schroeder and put the ball in Peyton Pritchard's hands. And the second part of that, putting the ball in Peyton Pritchard's hands, really didn't happen. It doesn't seem like until the playoffs, but he's become like a guy who's played just huge minutes for the Celtics this entire playoff run. And that's just not like I was fairly confident in his skills, but I didn't think he was going to be like key bench player for the Celtics for basically the entire playoffs.
Yeah, he's emerged and he's gotten to the point where they don't care that he's going to get targeted sometimes. They don't care that like on a team full of guys who are bigger and stronger, they just throw him out there because they know that his skill set is useful. And their on-off numbers with him on the court have been stellar. So Peyton Pritchard proving himself after being behind Dennis Schroeder for a few months of the season.
I mean, I feel like that's as good a place to end it as anyone else. Jay King, I have one question for you.
Just a little Dennis Schroeder slander.
Well, as long as we're all along those lines, is Ennis Freedom having his birthday party with the FBI, is that potable?
No, it's not. I disagree. Now I disagree.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.